Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin the Football Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. I'm Dave Ross here at Circus Sports in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is Justin Pugh, the former first-round pick of the New York Giants, at home in Arizona. Justin, great to have you here on VSiN on a Friday, my friend. First of all, are we on the same time zone? Did you have to get up as early as I did for the show today?
We are still figuring out. I don't know if anyone knows this out there, but in Arizona, we do not observe daylight savings. So when you guys are springing forward, falling back, I'm just sitting back, enjoying a nice cup of coffee.
There you go.
Trying to figure out what time zone I'm actually in right now.
Justin, it's great to have you, man. It's always been a pet peeve of mine. Anybody who follows me on X, they know I'm always railing against daylight savings time. So I believe, yeah, you had to get up just as early as I did today. We got a great show lined up here on a Friday. Going to go to New Jersey to catch up with our guy Thomas Gable to figure out how the books did last night with Thursday night football. Tim Murray's going to join us at the top of hour number two. Of course, Tim does a great job here with the tailgate show, getting you ready for college football as well. So Tim will be joining us here as the college football playoff does begin tonight. But Justin, week 16 began last night in LA, and ironically, the only two-game losing streak the Chargers had was broken with a week 5 win against the Broncos. The second two-game losing streak that the Chargers had was broken last night, again, 7-point win against Denver. So deja vu all over again. What'd you make of it? Because it did not look good until the craziness kind of at the end of the first half. And I felt like it kind of flipped the momentum a little bit going into half just down 8 instead of down 11.
Yeah, I think it was a tale of two halves. You look at the first half, Denver got out to a great start. They're giving the ball to everybody. You can't rely on any running backs in Denver's backfield. Bo Nix is getting everybody involved. I thought the Denver Broncos looked like the better team early. Mm. Now, all of a sudden, we have history being made. I'm sure we're going to talk about that here at some point with that, the fair catch and the interference and the field goal. And the Chargers came out and they took advantage of that in the second half. There were some halftime speeches. Justin Herbert woke up, decided he was going to readjust his Superman cape and he was going to get to work. Because honestly, when you look at both of these teams before the season, and maybe I'm a little bit off here, and you're going to probably, we were texting about this yesterday. I wasn't expecting either team to be in the playoff contention going into this season. And the one thing that I will say is great head coaches matter. And both these teams have great head coaches. Whatever Jim Harbaugh and Derwin James and Justin Herbert did at halftime, bottle that up and keep that going for the rest of the year, because this team came out and played with their hair on fire. Now, there were some penalties. There were some big moments that kept drives alive. But on third down, Justin Herbert always seemed to find the right guy to make the right play and really broke the Denver Broncos back on that 90-yard drive towards the very end of that game. And that is really what I think was the difference in it. It was Justin Herbert continues to do more with less. They get rid of every one of his star players, and he still tends to find somebody that you're like, hold on, let me double check. Let me go back to the box score. Where did this guy go to college? And I'm not, you know, there's some names on there. You're like, all right, Joshua Palmer, Hassan Haskins, and some of these names of guys that are making plays, you're like, let me just make sure I know where this team's coming from, where he's coming from. That is a testament to Justin Herbert.
Absolutely, Justin. And the way I look at it, too, is exactly what you said. Whatever they did at halftime, bottle it up, because they bottled up that Bronco offense. So again, Chargers get the money. If you laid the 2.5, you got that home. The over was never in doubt here, 41-42 with that 34-27. Almost had it at halftime, by the way these teams were so potent offensively. But Sean Payton talked about that, Justin. I want you to hear from Sean talking about the difference between the two halves and what happened with his offense in half number two.
That obviously cost us personal. I mean, look, that final game go-ahead drive, what were there, three? or three penalties in that final drive. And look, it just keeps continuing. So we got to do a better job coaching, because it's not like it's new. And so it'll cost you. It'll cost you in games.
And it did. So his offense with only two field goals in the second half, but he's referring there to that big personal foul where they had the Chargers stopped. It's still 21-13. They're going to kick the field goal more than likely in fourth and three. And instead of, they go ahead and get the automatic first down, punch it in for the score. They don't get the two-point conversion, but really did kind of flip that game. But again, 9 wins for both Harbaugh and Sean Payton. I know he's going to be hard on his guys today, Justin, but is that message to his team, hey, we got to clean this up. I don't want to say we gave it to them, but the penalties assisted in the second half, to Sean Payton's point. And if we don't do that, they weren't good enough to beat us straight up.
Yeah, I think the penalties always are a factor in any single game. When you look at the game last night, it was definitely lopsided in favor of the Los Angeles Chargers. And that is the testament to Jim Harbaugh doing the little things right throughout the entire season. Now, the Denver Broncos defense and Vance Joseph, they've been tremendous. There were some close calls in that game yesterday, though. You look at some of those personal fouls. Yeah, the horse collar when Justin Herbert's rolling out to the right. But the late hit, you start to feel for some of these defenders. And that's an offensive lineman saying that. That's an offensive lineman that's maybe spent a year not playing football at saying that. Because if anyone got near my quarterback, I was going after them. But the penalties will bite you in the butt as the season progresses, as you get in these close games. When the games come down to one possession or one key play, and you're the one giving up a 15-yard penalty that allows from a drive to go from a three-point field goal attempt, which field goals have not been anywhere near automatic this year. I mean, we got guys missing extra points left and right, to giving Justin Herbert 3 more downs to get into the end zone. Those are crucial plays that end up deciding playoff picture, that end up deciding the future of where some of these teams are going to go, the future of some of these guys' careers, which is crazy to say. But I mean, like, you go from making the playoffs to not. Ownership makes changes based on, are you winning football games and are you not? It is a what have you done for me lately league, and penalties would be a costly determinant in all of that.
Justin, you tweeted out, because I follow you on Twitter, and by the way, you should follow Justin on X as well, at Justin Peele. You said, history in the kicking game, kickers needed that this year. Justin, was that a kind of a backhanded compliment at the kicker from an offensive lineman?
I cannot believe how many games have come down to the wire this year. And it is a wide right. It is a wide right. It's getting blocked. I mean, the Chiefs were the benefactors of some of those plays. The best kicker of all time can't seem to get it between the goalposts and Justin Tucker there in Baltimore. He made some the other day. Harrison Butker comes back last week, and he's dropping to one knee while trying to kick the ball. And I'm sitting there like, I'm putting my body on the line. And like, these automatic kicks are just – They're no more. I don't know if I wonder if it's like Reaganomics, where it just kind of like trickles down. If like your best kicker is missing kicks, if like the Hall of Fame Justin Tucker is missing kicks, like everyone else is looking at it, and like you got Young Way Koo over there in Atlanta that hasn't made a kick in more.
He can't make a kick anymore,
and it really makes you nervous. I think everybody out there, if like you have a half point on the line and there's an extra point, like, you're no longer running to the bathroom or grabbing your chicken wings or talking to somebody. You're locked in. Like, is this extra point? Like, please. And like, this is when you're probably saying your prayers to to whoever you pray to the most, is when the kicker steps up. So for us to get a Cameron Dicker fair catch, I mean, I practiced this. We've done this during the season when I was in New York with the Giants and with the Arizona Cardinals. You get the fair catch, free kick, the interference. I didn't know with the penalty how it would still work out. That was one of the coolest things I've seen in a while. My wife was putting our newborn down, and I'm like, hold on, babe. I got to see this fair catch, free kick. Yeah.
It was history. And again, it really did. Look, if you had the Broncos last night, you're going to halftime with an 11-point lead because you've got the ball. You get the pick of Herbert right there at the goal line. It's under a minute to go. Sean Payton tries a play on first, and it goes backwards for 3 yards. So it's second and 13. The clock's running. Then on the second down, he decides to throw another pass. It's incomplete. Then Harbaugh says, ooh, okay, third down, maybe I'll call a timeout, and sets it up. Now, I couldn't set up for the penalty to get them into the free kick territory, but it does end up, as you mentioned, a Dicker 57-yard free kick field goal, which is bizarre. You can't rush it, nothing, right? So it was actually a pretty easy kick when you look at it here. So you guys did practice. This is something that is known, because I'm like, what in the wild, wild world of sports is going on here?
I'm going to give a comparison. It's like you hit an amazing drive and you're sitting there in the fairway. You have a wedge in your hand. It's like, this should be an easy kick. It was still 57 yard. Yeah, 57-yard kick. And no one's around him. He's lining up like he's doing a kickoff, and he just puts it right through the uprights. That's a kicker that deserves to sing for "He's a Jolly Good Fellow" when he gets into the locker room with Jim Harbaugh. That's the best tradition in football right now, by the way.
All right. Well, by the way, who's got it better than us? Nobody. 9 wins for the Broncos, 9 wins for the Chargers. Neither one are officially in yet. But, Justin, which out of these two teams, if you're one of the big boys in the AFC, do you not want to play in that wild card round if they both do, in fact, both get in?
I will say that it has to be the Chargers. There is an X factor with teams that are coached by Jim Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin. And I know we're going to talk about that Mike Tomlin coach team here a little bit later. They have their teams playing for one another. What I will say is, look at any post-game press conference, and not the press conference, go into the locker room with these teams after, and watch how the Los Angeles Chargers love playing for one another. They don't have all the glitz and the glam. They don't have the stars all over the place. They do want defense. They got a good defensive line. They love playing for one another, and that's a team that you can never count out. I will say the Denver Broncos defense has been tremendous. Vance Joseph has been spectacular. But I'm going to go lean towards the Chargers on a team that I would not want to play.
Everybody, if you're getting at Justin on X, at Justin Pugh. Kickers, remember, I try to defend your honor there. Justin just said, hey, you needed this, Kickers. We needed a moment like we got with Dicker the Kicker yesterday. When we come back, let's get to our Lombardi Line Game of the Week and also delve deeper into the Week 16 slate. That's next here on VC.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are back to Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Justin Pugh coming at you here on this fabulous Friday. I do want to get to our game of the week, Justin, which we will do in a matter of moments. Also, we saw our first result here in week number 16. Chargers get the money, 34-27. The over cashes easily early in the third quarter as we get a ton of points last night in SoFi Stadium. You also tweeted this out, Justin, and you said it's going to be weird watching the NFL on Prime from home tonight. I've been to 12 games this year, capturing the fans' point of view. What I found out is the NFL is absolutely the best sport in the world. Justin, did it take you going around our great country to realize that football is now America's game?
Oh, it's without a question America's game. When you show up to a city on a Wednesday and you have everybody and their mother wearing Eagles jerseys, doing Eagles chants a day before the game, that is what makes the NFL so beautiful. When you go to Cleveland, Ohio, and it's snowing, and everybody's running for cover, but they're still barking at each other, talking about the dog pound. The game is in a good spot. So what I did this year is, you know, played for 11 years. I travel to every Thursday night game. I do radio on Sundays, so can't go to any Sunday games. But every Thursday, my buddy and I, we picked, you know, we didn't pick. It's always it's the game of the week, Thursday. And we would go travel to all those stadiums. So I missed a few in there. Seattle, I got a little sick after an Atlanta game. I didn't make it there. We didn't go to L.A. last night because we had done the Rams previously in the season. And the Rams are the toughest place to film on planet Earth. You can't film in that stadium.
Oh.
But really got to experience some of the best games of the year. I mean, that the Steelers-Cleveland game, the Eagles Commanders game, I guess that really wasn't the best game of all time. The Baltimore Ravens, Bengals, the list goes on and on. But what I will say is I get to sit in the fan section. I get to sit and put my arms around these great fans. And it's been an experience unlike any other.
Okay, I'll say this from my reporting days as a scribe. Like when I went to Philadelphia and I was working in D.C. at the time, they knew, like that fan base is smart. They didn't know who I was, so they knew I was from the enemy, right? I was from the rival city. So I once had a big for a hockey game. I knew they were going to throw beer on me, Justin. So I turned to them before the live shot and I said, hey, when you guys throw beer on me, can you wait till the shot's over? So it was like a preemptive strike. Did they know, like in Philly, that you were a Giants guy? Like that can get dicey.
Yeah, that can get real dicey. I wasn't. So I always would wear the home team jersey.
Oh, smart.
Right? I would always support the home team. But I wouldn't wear the Eagles jerseys. I wouldn't wear the NFC East. So what I did is, you know, Philadelphia, Rocky statue.
Yeah.
I got a green Rocky shirt where I wore the Sylvester Stallone standing on the steps at the art museum. Like, that's what I wore during the game. And the fans actually embraced me everywhere I go. Even once I told them I played for the Giants, I'm from Philadelphia. I grew up in the area. So once they knew my story, local kid coming back and watching some of his friends play. So I have friends on most of these teams as well throughout my career. So they took it easy on me. But I will say, if you wear an opposing team's jersey to Philadelphia, Cleveland, be ready. You are going to hear it. And there may be a few times you might not feel as safe.
I was just saying this, very, very shrewd move by you. Must be that Syracuse education. Very smart.
Yeah, you gotta sneak in there. You gotta be able to speak the language too. Throw a couple restaurants out there. Like, oh, I was at Angelo's getting a cheesesteak, or I was at this deli.
Gino's or Pat's, right? Famous... Gino's, yeah, don't you do that?
No, it's not Gino's or Pat's. Oh, you get that's why they threw beer on you.
Yeah,
you didn't know the cheesesteak spot to call out.
Hey, you fellow Philadelphians, what do? Gino's or Pat's? This guy's going to get doused with beer. Let's get to our game of the week here on the Lombardi Line, Justin. It's a good one, and it's not too far from where we're talking about here. Charm City in Baltimore, they will be hosting
This is the Lombardi Line.
And again, if the Steelers get this win this week, they wrap up the AFC North here, Justin. Obviously, the Ravens have to win this game to keep their dreams alive of winning this division. Very quickly, it does feel like, no disrespect to Pittsburgh, but if there's a team that's equipped to go on the road and win, it would be the Ravens and not necessarily Pittsburgh. So while the importance, there's not one, this game isn't more important to the other. It does feel like, Justin, if the Steelers could wrap this up this week with 2 weeks still to play, do we look at the Steelers differently if they at least get this 3 seed behind Kansas City and or Buffalo, if they can wrap it up Saturday?
100%. The Steelers need to get healthy. I mean, when you look at the game against Philadelphia last week, it's as if Philadelphia didn't even honor the passing game and Russell Wilson. They were loading the box. They were flying downhill. CJ Gardner-Johnson wasn't even thinking about getting beat deep by anybody. The Steelers need to be at home, even though their facilities, if you watch the Hard Knocks, they don't look all too good. It looks like they're in a warehouse shipping container with their meetings. Meanwhile, the Baltimore Ravens are in a castle. But I think the Steelers are a team that has to have that home field advantage. Have the terrible towels rolling. Have those people screaming at the top of their lungs. I would feel a lot more comfortable if I was a Steelers fan if I had them at home. The Ravens, I think, they can travel on the road. Lamar can do it anywhere, anytime, even though the Steelers have been his kryptonite.
It is bizarre how that's been their kryptonite. By the way, I've been to that practice facility numerous times in Baltimore, and it is, you're right, it's... it does have that feel. And then if you're watching the Steelers on Hard Knocks, you're like, this is the Steelers? But yes, somehow it still works for both of these teams. With the mutual, I don't want to say respect, but there is mutual respect, obviously, between Harbaugh and Tomlin. And you mentioned it, that there does seem to be this thing where Tomlin has had his way with Harbaugh. Is there any rhyme or reason to that, Justin? Or is it just happenstance that, well, Lamar's been injured for a few of these games, too. That's not all that they've just shut down Lamar Jackson. But they have done, they figured out a way to slow down a guy that looks like right now with 34 touchdowns, only 3 picks. We all know about how he can utilize his legs. How are the Steelers able, seemingly, to be able to slow down a guy that nobody else can slow down?
Yeah, you give a lot of credit to the head coach and the schemes and the plays they draw up, but you have to give a lot of credit to the Jimmy and Joes on the field. When you have TJ Watt, when you have Highsmith, when you have Cam Hayward, when you have the secondary playing at a high level, I don't think many people were taking the Pittsburgh Steelers to win the AFC North. Like, I'll be the first to raise my hand. You did?
11-1 ticket, baby. Come on. We need this one, Justin.
That is genius.
We need it.
That is genius.
But Justin, the only reason why I made that play was actually before the draft, right? Because I was thinking, oh, they might draft a quarterback because they wiped out the entire quarterback room in the offseason. And then, of course, they make the trade for Justin Fields, and then they go pick up Russell Wilson. It was all bet on the 52 and that guy. It was all bet on Mike Tomlin. That I was looking at this division figuring it might cannibalize itself with the four teams. It really hasn't played out that way. It's really just been two really good teams and two, dare I say, bad teams. I know Cincinnati's trying to make a late run. But really the bet Justin was on, can they get good enough quarterback play? Because I knew the defense would keep them in every game, as you mentioned, with Watt and company. And it's worked out that way. It might not get home, but it's sitting pretty good spot here with 3 weeks to go. If you get two of those, more than likely they're going to win the division.
No, I agree. It definitely looks very good. And I will also say, if there was a team that I would not want to play, I know we talked about the Chargers and the Broncos earlier, the Cincinnati Bengals, I would not want to play. I get that their defense has played horrendous this year, and they just lost Sam Hubbard probably for the rest of the season. But Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, like, I just wouldn't want to play against a team that you know can go hang 50 on you at any given night. With that being said, yeah, the Cleveland Browns, if they could figure out the quarterback position, they have some talent around them. But Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh, seemingly figure it out every single year. What I will say is Lamar Jackson has to feel that pressure. You go 0-1, you have a bad game. All right, that's one. You do it 10 times in a row, pattern starts to develop there, and you start to feel that internally as the season progresses. And I remember when we were in New York and we would play Philadelphia, for whatever reason, Philadelphia always played us tough. Whatever scheme that they had, whatever they were drawing up to beat us, always seemed to give us fits. When we were in Arizona with the Cardinals, it was the LA Rams and Aaron Donald that was always the team that was always like, all right, we got to play these guys. We'd always go and we would beat Seattle. We would beat San Francisco, even though San Fran was just, you know, the much better team at the time. So there is something to it that internally that gets to some of these players and some of these teams.
It does, and sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to it, but obviously we get the familiarity between these two teams, the two coaches, the cities. There will be terrible towels there in Charm City as well on Saturday. So a massive game here. It is the game of the week. We'll break it down even further as the show goes today. But again, if you want to bet smarter, we got you covered here at VSiN. You got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber if you are not already, because we have actionable content going to give you all the betting edges that you need. Right now, check it out. Hoops Peterson's got you covered with college hoops. Zachary Cohen, big one tonight. We're going to talk about with Tim Murray, Indiana, Notre Dame. Nigel Seeley's got you covered for soccer as well. Josh Appbaum with his betting splits and best bets. Steve Mackinnon, incredible info from Steve on his NBA analytics report. And Adam Burke with his top NFL player props as well. So to get all the articles on VSiN.com right now, you can sign up for the holiday special for full access until May 1st of 2025 for only $79, VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, Justin, when we come back, we're going to go to New Jersey and catch up with Thomas Gable, see how the books made out at the Borgata last night and what type of action he's seeing for the weekend. That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are back in the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Justin Pugh here. Going to go out to the Borgata in New Jersey with our guy Thomas Gable. Does a great job running the Borgata there. And very quickly, Justin, did you used to go down to Jersey? Did you ever go check out Thomas and the guys at the Borgata?
Yes, I am a Jersey Shore purist. Now, South Jersey, you have to make sure you say that, because South Jersey is Philadelphia. North Jersey is New York, and I don't even know. You have some kind of allegiance. Trenton's where you draw the line. Grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, so we always were down in Atlantic City. There's a few places, you know, maybe when we were a little bit younger. The Showboat Borgata was one of our favorites.
Yeah, TG, so he joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. Does Justin have his geography right? Did he nail that for South Jersey and all those things?
100%. I think Atlantic City is the one place, though, just because of the casinos, they do attract New Yorkers down. But if you're just going to the beach, he's absolutely correct. Philadelphia goes to South Jersey, And then New York obviously stays a little bit further north.
I absolutely love it. I Thomas, I wish I knew you when I wore a younger man's clothes. I would have hung out at the Borgata a lot with you, my friend. How was the action there last night? Because Justin and I were talking about it off the top of the show. I feel like if Bronco bettors, I had that ticket, they felt really good about it in the first half. And then somehow, some way, yeah. Not only do they not get the win, they don't get the cover as well. How'd you guys make out at the Borgata?
Yeah, we had just a small decision on the side in that one. Lost on the total. The total obviously flew over there, closed at 41.5. But, yeah, Chargers money got there. And also, if you had a Chargers season win total of 8.5, you hit the over last night with that win as well. In fact, I remember this summer I was talking to a respected bettor way before the season started, and he had taken the Chiefs to win the division right at the opening. He got a decent, like minus 200, minus 225. Obviously, that went up through the summer. And then he told me that he had actually come back, and because he figured there really wasn't going to be too much competition in the AFC West for the Chiefs, so he figured he would lay that price. And then ended up coming back and taking the Chargers season win total over, kind of just as a small hedge. Because he figured there was only going to be one team that possibly could, if anybody could challenge the Chiefs, would be the Chargers. And he figured he could hit both. If he doesn't hit one, he'll possibly hit both. Worst case would be he hits one and ends up hitting both there with the season win total going over last night. So, yeah, I mean, listen, the Chargers, obviously, some people had decent expectations for them this year with Harbaugh. I think the team, though, that has been surprising in that division has been the Broncos, but disappointing result for them last night. But, yeah, certainly they've exceeded expectations all season long.
Yeah, yeah, I look at it the same way. And, again, you look at the teams that are still alive here, Thomas, and I wonder, are you seeing any action on long shots, say, like the Bengals, to still make the postseason? Are you seeing any of those futures tickets here, or do you feel like the AFC playoffs now, with that result last night, really does kind of cement the Chargers in there? Maybe, we don't know, they'll jockey for position with Denver. Are there anybody else, Bengals, Colts, Dolphins, backers, or is that action all dead?
I think that's all pretty much dead at this point, Dave. Like you said, I mean, the Chargers, I think with this one, pretty much cemented themselves. Obviously not 100%, but they're more than likely in, and same with Denver. But yeah, the other teams, you're not seeing much.
What about teams that made the quarterback moves? You look at, you know, New York and the Falcons have the game this week with Penix. You have Locke, you have DTR with the Cleveland Browns, Mason Rudolph coming in. Some actually probably encourage people to go after those lines, and others you're like, hey, I'm going to stay as far away as possible.
Yeah, you know, the Falcons move with to Penix was probably a little – it was a little surprising to me, just because, one, you know, listen, we know Cousins, what Cousins has looked like, and obviously the Falcons still have a ton to play for. It's just, I think the timing of the move was a little surprising. Falcons opened 10-point favorites over the Giants this week, and then when that news got announced, you saw the number dip. And the one thing I will say, we don't have much to go on with Penix. We really didn't see him during the preseason. The Falcons shut him down very quickly in the preseason. And, you know, obviously when he was drafted, there was a lot of question marks around that organization. Why would they take him when they did after signing Cousins to this big deal? But, you know, aside from his body of work in college, which we all know about, there really hasn't been much that we've seen from Penix in the Falcons offense. Now, obviously, Atlanta has seen enough in practice that they said, all right, he doesn't need preseason snaps. We've seen enough in practice. We're just going to shut him down. But now he obviously comes in here, I guess a good opponent for him to have his first game against in the New York Giants, probably one of the weakest, if not the weakest teams right now in the NFL. In fact, I have them power rated dead last at this point in my power ratings for the NFL. So if there's any opponent you want to start him against, it's the Giants, to see, you know, what he can give you. But listen, the Falcons are in, you know, must win situations here for the playoffs and for that division. They pretty much have to win out. So big number, still, even if you're playing the Giants, for him to cover. But it's going to be a little tricky there to back a quarterback who you really just haven't seen much of anything.
I'm surprised Brian Daboll hasn't called Justin yet to see if he can suit up for Sunday. We need some help to protect those quarterbacks. Thomas, I'm curious because how do you safeguard yourself against Patrick Mahomes on the high ankle sprain? Like, we saw it come out, the favorite flips obviously to Houston, then then he practices, it flips back to the Chiefs. How has that kind of merry-go-round circus been this week?
Well, it was interesting because when the Texans opened as 3-point favorites for this game, and it looked like, all right, everybody heard about the high ankle sprain and Mahomes wasn't looking like he was going to go. And, you know, there was a lot of people who came in on Texans laying the 3 and initially. And then all of a sudden, as you said, the news started to get a little bit better. And then obviously Mahomes now I think is completely off the off the injury report. So he's definitely going to go, and you've seen this before from him. He plays through things, and obviously the Chiefs have a difficult schedule here, just in terms of number of games and, you know, a short time period there. But this is one that obviously they thought that they need to get him in for. And listen, if Mahomes feels like he can go, then he can go. But yeah, we did see a few people. Respect and money come in, take the points with the Chiefs when you could get them, just under the possibility that, hey, Mahomes could go. And obviously they're sitting with some good CLV now with those early tickets. But I think, a lot of the money's still to come on this. 80 to 90% of the handle is still going to be coming in on day of game. So we'll see how this gets bet. But right now it was just interesting the way with the early news and the early week, how this all, the betting really came in. And it was, again, the public seemed to jump on the Texans because they certainly weren't going to back Carson Wentz. And you saw some respected money there come in, take the points with the Chiefs, just hoping that Mahomes was going to give it a go. And sure enough, that's the case.
I don't know if the public has tuned in to watch the Houston Texans offensive line. So even with Carson Wentz and Steve Spagnuolo as the D coordinator, I would feel good about them. And we're used to the Chiefs being massive favorites in previous seasons. My biggest question is, when you have some of these massive spreads, Packers minus 14, Bills minus 14, Falcons, you had mentioned, Bengals, how does the book end up dealing with those numbers, and how's the action looking on those games?
Well, sometimes, I mean, the massive spreads, what you see typically from the public, you'll see the big favorites get thrown into a lot of parlays. Sometimes they'll get teased down. But for the most part, you don't see people really just betting those teams outright. So you'll typically see the dogs get more money just betting them straight up. But typically the bigger favorites will all get thrown into parlay. So the Bills, I could tell you, if you look at probably our parlay mix right now, the Bills are probably in every parlay imaginable. And the same with like the Bengals right now, laying 8.5, they're in a ton of parlays and so forth. That's just the way that the public bets and always has. I don't think much will change in regards to that.
Thomas, we got to wrap it up here, but I did get a tweet from you on Saturday. Was there something about a Syracuse Georgetown game? Did you want to ask Justin about that? Like, how did that result go?
I think we know how the result went for the Orange there. I mean, it was not only a great win for Georgetown, but Ed Cooley follows it up with a win against Creighton the other night as well. So maybe the Hoyas have found something here. And, I hate to say that, but I mean, listen, I know you came back and said, listen, if it's not the Big East game, it doesn't really count.
It doesn't count.
I think for Hoyas fans, it still counts.
Look, Syracuse is turning into a football school, all
there
right?
There we go. That's it. We're a football school now. We don't play basketball up there in the Carrier Dome, whatever they call it these days. TG, appreciate you as always, my friend. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There he is, Thomas Gable, everybody, down there at the Borgata. When we come back, more news and notes galore here in NFL Week number 16.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We'll be right back.
back here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Justin Pugh coming at you here on this Football Friday. A lot of fun having Thomas Gable join us from the Borgata in the last segment, getting a book's perspective of what we could expect in Week 16 and beyond. We got a lot of news and notes and a lot of injuries and how they're going to affect some of these numbers that we have on the board this week. But Justin, I wanted to ask you this because you're a smart guy, you're an educated man. You went to Syracuse, my favorite university, even though I didn't go there. But I'm a little disappointed, I got to say, because I don't know that people know that back in 2015, when you appeared on a celebrity edition of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you had a shot to win some real money, and you did win some money for Shriners Hospital for Children, which is really cool. But you could have won more. Do you remember the question that you got wrong on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I never forget it. Never forget it. Do you want me to say the question,
yeah,
or do you want it to?
Well, because I mean, you got to be nervous, right? It's still live TV, so like maybe you get that question and it seems like a layup. But could you tell the people what was proposed to you and what your options were?
Yeah. So the question was, and Terry Crews was the host at the time.
Oh, wow.
And there's more to that story that we'll get to that point. But it was an actress named her son Bodie after which Patrick Swayze movie character? Dirty Dancing's up there, Point Break's up there, and there's two more, and I forget which ones those were. I'm like, you know what? The only movie that I've seen of the bunch was Point Break, and it can't be Point Break. I don't remember a Bodie in Point Break. Remember, I'm first year, second year in the NFL, so I'm probably spending more time like
studying the playbook.
Yeah, getting ready to play a game. Tom Coughlin was my head coach, so I was scared to not wear the right socks.
Right.
So I really wasn't watching a lot of Patrick Swayze movies, and I actually lop off the correct answer. Everyone knows when I gave you those two options who it was. And it was a $15,000 swing. Terry Crews says to me, "Hey, Justin, you just got drafted in the first round. We're guaranteeing you $15,000. If you get it right, you're going to walk with 30. If you get it wrong, you're going to walk with 15. Why don't you put the money up? If you get the question wrong, just take a guess. You're down to 50-50. So I went with Dirty Dancing. I got it wrong. We cut the check to Shriners Hospitals for Children. They do a great job with children dealing with burns and cleft lips, all the great things. We would love to support them. But you know what, Terry Crews? I still remember you owe me. Maybe next time I'll make you split that with me, Terry Crews.
Your other two options were Ghost and The Outsiders. Very young Patrick Swayze in that one. But again, I will just say this. I am an FBI agent. Brody, everybody knows Brody. Everybody knows that's Point Break.
And they've remade it.
Yeah.
And it was. Now, here's my question for you, Dave.
Yep.
Who was the actress that they were talking about?
I was in love with her. She was the surfer. She surfed in the movie.
I know, but no, but there was an actress. It threw me off. It was an actress who's named her son after Bodie. So like that's where like the question kind of threw me for a loop a little bit. And
I can honestly say this. I've never seen Dirty Dancing. I had no desire.
Well,
I didn't.
You know, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure when you have all those cameras on you, all those lights, you're sweating, you're 320 pounds. You just had to have four protein smoothies to keep your weight up for Tom Coughlin and blocking for Eli Manning.
You had a lot of things on your plate.
And a lot of things on my plate.
By the way,
time.
I'm now getting harassed by the staff. Savannah just said, "It's so good, Dirty Dancing." I know, like he picks her up. I've seen the clips. I still think you did pretty good with all that. So Tom Coughlin would stress me out too. I mean, by the way, great coach, but I'm sure pressure, a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I bet a lot of my Giants fans are wishing Tom Coughlin was there right now.
Yeah, you guys miss him yet in New York? You should. I wonder if Darren Rizzi is making a case here to be the next head coach of the Saints. Special teams guy gets elevated after the firing of Dennis Allen. I had this to say about why he might go with Spencer Rattler as the rookie quarterback here if Derek Carr is out Monday night against the Packers. Let's hear from the interim head coach.
He performed, and I didn't see a sense of panic at all. I think I thought the last three games he was out there, like any rookie quarterback, there was a little bit of, you know, sometimes where he looked a little panicky. I saw him much more relaxed. I saw him much more in control. I saw a lot more leadership out of him. And so that was the impressive part. Now, you know, maybe coming off the bench with nothing to lose, you know, kind of just kind of running around and gunslinging, but that's kind of been his thing, right? That's what's made him the guy that he is. It's kind of been his MO, his whole career. So hopefully now with a, you know, when he knows he's preparing today. So he took the reps, all the reps today with the ones, and we're going to kind of get him ready to go if Derek can't.
You know, I've been betting them. I got home last week against the Commanders, didn't get the win, but certainly covered the number 7.5. And it didn't look like I was going to get there for a long time. But what I've noticed is this team hasn't quit with Darren Rizzi as the interim guy. So, Justin, you've been in this situation before. When you hear that and he says, all right, if Derek can't go, we'll go to the rookie Spencer Rattler. How does an interim coach in what looks like a dead season keep that locker room? Because it looks like he's done that job, which is a big job.
Yeah, Darren Rizzi is a North Jersey guy. He's got that gumption about him where he's going to go out there and he's going to fight. And players play for coaches like that. You have to remember, players are still playing for their careers, for their livelihoods, for the job next season. So a lot of times when coaches come in and out, players have to remain locked in. If you get a guy that can pull on those emotional strings, like a Jim Harbaugh, like a Mike Tomlin, that is something that goes a long way in that locker room. And you have seen by how that team responded. You also saw some of the players weren't the biggest fans of Dennis Allen. And I don't know Dennis Allen, but you saw some cryptic tweets and things that came out from some of the guys on the team. Darren Rizzi has this team playing at a high level. High level, imperatively, I should say that. I mean, I want to make sure the Saints looked like world beaters the first couple of weeks of the season. We were crowning them NFC South champions. Things fell apart. It reminds me of, remember Rich, Rich Bisaccia when he was with the Las Vegas Raiders and they went on that run. This is very similar to that. Mm-hmm. Bisaccia. Yep. Sorry, Rich. I don't want to get yelled at by.
Special teams guy, right? Same type deal.
I truly believe special teams coaches need to get more head coaching opportunities. They deal with the entire team. They deal with all the personalities. They're not just in their little cubicle worrying about the passing game, they are much like a head coach has to be the CEO of that team. They have to know every position. If somebody goes down, they have to know situational football. They have to know when there's a punt and you wave for a fair catch and there's a penalty at the end of the half, you get a free kick and you get to have a chance like the Chargers did. So I think Darren Rizzi, they're playing Rizzi ball down there. They're getting after it on special teams. You have to consider him as a candidate to be your head coach next year.
Getting 14 Monday night against Green Bay. If you saw Garrett Wilson explodes a little bit on the sideline, he said he was frustrated. This is basically what he had to say about it, addressing that sideline outburst. Quote, if we're struggling in the red zone, I feel like the fade is a safe route to go as far as that. I saw the camera caught that, and I'm sorry they did, the camera. Whoever may be offended, but yeah, I play this game a little differently. They caught me telling our receivers coach, Sean Jefferson, that probably was about the third or fourth time I said it. Sometimes it's as simple as if they're going to play man coverage, one-on-one of receivers with the DBs, they're saying that they trust their DBs. If you throw the fade, it's showing that you trust your receivers. That's interesting to me. Justin, you know what this is like in those locker rooms. I know we call wide receivers divas all the time. Does Garrett Wilson have a point? Hey, man, if it's singled up, show that you trust me in that one-on-one matchup like the defensive coaches are trusting the DB.
Yes and no. Look, if you're Garrett Wilson and you've earned the right to say, hey, when I've been one-on-one more times often than not, I catch the ball. I mean, you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers and a guy like George Pickens.
Yep.
If you ever have one of those deep ball specialists, you're getting him the ball anytime he was one-on-one. When I was in Arizona, we had DeAndre Hopkins. We were playing a little backyard football. Anytime D-Hop was one-on-one, Kyler Murray was getting him the ball. When you have an alpha in the receiving room, you have to feed him the rock. The issue in New York in the Jets, you have two alphas. You have Devontae, and then you have Garrett Wilson. Mm. Who is that alpha in that room? Who is that guy when they're one-on-one and it's man coverage that you're going to feed the ball to? And Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams have been on the same page for their entire career. You can see them start to get rolling here, that little fade to the back of the end zone to Devontae Adams. The quick outs, you get it to him in space. That has been the issues with the Jets all year long, that their timing has been off. And Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, we all thought they would come together. It would be this beautiful, it would be like Odie and Point Break. It would just be art on the screen. And we haven't seen that. And that's why Devontae Adams is there right now. And I know Sean Jefferson, the receiving coach, he is one of the best in the business. He's trying to calm his guys down. He had a deal with D-Hop and when he wanted the ball in Arizona and down the road. I play with Odell Beckham in New York City. Receivers always want the ball no matter what. You just don't want to come out week in and say, hey, get me the ball. cause controversy on a team that already has the controversy? Do we even want to talk about ownership and how they're making their trades? I don't know.
By the way, Jets getting three against the Rams. Feels a little trappy. By the way, May 1st, you get the VSiN Pro access to everything we do with our holiday special. Okay, it's going to go all the way through May 1st, just $79. You get exclusive betting splits like we have here at Circa and, of course, DraftKings. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Unwrap your winning edge today. Hour number two, talking college football with Tim Murray next here on the Lombardi.
And we're out.
Okay, give me one sec. I need to load funds into my gaming apps.
Stormy, really? With a credit card?
Well, with my credit card from GBank, they don't treat gaming transactions as cash advances. Plus, you get 1% cash back rewards every time that you load your gaming apps with funds.
What else can that card do?
Dave, I'm busy, but I will let the voiceover tell you more about the bennies of the GBank Visa Signature Card. Take it away!
GBank, the official bank of VSiN, has the credit card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere. With the GBank Signature Visa Card, you'll earn 1% cashback rewards on gaming and sports app loads, and 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. Plus, GBank doesn't treat loads to gaming apps as cash advances, keeping more of your money in play. Visit VSiN.com/GBank to apply. Terms and conditions apply. Subject to credit approval. Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard share their knowledge of sports, gambling, and pop culture on Follow the Money at a New Time.
Like, the guy can play football.
Yep.
And without him, we're talking about this team maybe being the worst one in the entire league.
On the bandwagon, I was high on this team, but my concern was this awful coaching staff.
They'll keep tabs on the big wins and bad beats from the night before. Plus, get you geared up for the action that's about to begin. Follow the Money now at 4 p.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN, the sports betting network. The holidays are here, and so is the ultimate gift for every sports bettor: a VSiN Pro subscription. With VSiN Pro, you'll unlock expert picks sent to your inbox daily, access to exclusive betting splits, and 24/7 video coverage through the VSiN Watch app. Plus, betting guides and best bets for the college football playoffs, the Super Bowl, and March Madness. Lock in our holiday special, just $79 through May 1st. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and join the sports betting network.
This is VSiN, the sports betting network.